Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
Now back to Ringside with the voice of small business and the champion of the entrepreneur.
Say it now, gentlemen. Undisputed heavyweight champion of the world.
The Small Business Advocate, Jim Blasingame.
We're back. It's 34 after. Thank you for joining us. If you just got here, welcome aboard. If you've been hanging around already this morning, thanks for that, too. My website is www.jbsba.com, and our phone number is 800-531-3815. Let me introduce you to Leslie Fine. She's an associate professor of marketing at the Fisher School of Business, which is a part of the Fisher School of Business is part of the, or College of Business, I should say, part of the Ohio State University. She's also the academic coordinator for their executive MBA program. Leslie, welcome to the show.
Good morning. Thank you.
It's good to have you on the show. As you know, we've had three of your compadres on the show in the past. Joe Aluto, who's, I guess, is your boss.
And, yes, he's my boss.
And a couple of other professors there talking about what, over the last couple of months, talking about what colleges are doing to grow entrepreneurs. And your area of expertise is in the marketing area. And I want you to talk to us about something you call the Capstone Marketing Case Course. And tell us about what you teach your students there.
Sure. When we grow marketing students, we give them, at the beginning, a lot of basic tools, concepts, theories. And the students really need some kind of experience to be able to put those all together in an integrative sense, in an application sense. And that's what we try to do in the Capstone Case Course. The course does not introduce any new content, but we have students analyze cases. Most of the cases come from Harvard, which is one of the best case repositories in the world. Hmm. But the students have to apply what they've learned in the previous courses to solving real business problems. All of these cases are about actual businesses. In most cases, you know, the names are not changed to protect the innocent. And it kind of gives them a sense of what it's like to be dumped into a business at a point in its cycle when it's experiencing some kind of problem.
Right.
And how do you use knowledge of marketing to then go step into that problem and make a determination about the best way to solve that problem? And I think these kinds of skills, these kind of integrated, broad thinking skills, are very important for students who are coming out, particularly students who are thinking about being entrepreneurs.
Well, there's no question about it, because one of the things we know is business at any level, the tiny, tiny one-person home office to, you know, all the way up to the billion-dollar companies, have these challenges all the time. And so you're never going to get away from those. And if you don't enjoy finding, you know, turning what some people think is a problem into a challenge and then turning that challenge into an opportunity, if you don't enjoy that, if you don't, or at least if you don't relish taking on those things when they happen and knowing that you can defeat them and turn them into an opportunity, if you don't want to do that, then you don't need to be a business owner.
Well, and I think that's, you know, exactly true. It's an astute observation. And one of the things that I've noticed in my years at Ohio State, I've been there 12 years now, and from the beginning of my career till now, is students seem to be much more focused now on the quick fix. I think that, mm-hmm. you know, the pace of technology, and I don't know if it's the video game generation or the 30-second sitcom.
Right.
I don't know what it is, but students really think that they can read a problem and right away give me an answer and move on to the next problem. And it's very difficult to encourage them and to motivate them to actually get into the guts of the situation.
Right.
And to untangle all the threads and to figure out, you know, what lies at the core of these kinds of issues. And I really think that the students who do enjoy that, the students who are better at it, are probably the kind of people who at some point in their life will engage in entrepreneurial, you know, exercises, whether it's starting a small business for themselves or being entrepreneurial in the context of a larger organization.
Well, Leslie, I'm gonna make a statement that I bet you haven't thought about.
Okay.
I'm gonna say that there's one service that you provide in this program that is probably, it's an invaluable service that you provide that you probably hadn't thought about, and that is that when your students go through these exercises and they see the enormity and almost the insurmountable aspect of some of these things, and they see actually how much work is involved, how much stick-to-itiveness is involved, how much they've got to... Only somebody who loved doing this would do this. What you've done is you've let several of them know, you know what? I know now that I never want to be a business owner.
Well, I don't want to call you, but I have thought about that.
Well, good for you. Good for you. I just want to get you riled up a little bit this morning, Leslie. No, good for you because, you know, you think about it. How many people do you know have hocked the house and the family, you know, mom's diamonds and their pearls and everything to start a business only to find out, you know what, I don't like this very much.
No, I think they do get us. I think the more...
Hold on. I'm sorry, Leslie. Hold on to that thought. We've got to take a quick break. We've got to sell some stuff. And we're going to do that right after. And we're going to come back with Leslie Fine right after these messages. More to come. Don't go away. We're back at 17 till. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. We're visiting with Leslie Fine. She's Associate Professor of Marketing at the Fisher College of Business at Ohio State University. And this is the fourth in a series of interviews we're doing with members of that school, of that college, talking about how they're growing entrepreneurs and why that's important. And one of the reasons, Leslie, as you know, is that I want to do this is because I want small business owners to start getting an idea about some of the graduates that they may be employing and maybe hopefully get excited about some of the tools and the skills that they're going to bring to their companies. And you know, you used the word problem a minute ago, and one of the things, another benefit I see from what you're doing in this Capstone Marketing Course program is that they start to see, well, you know what, I thought of this as a problem when we started, but now I realize it was just a challenge because challenges are what you turn into opportunities.
Well, if we succeed at that, and I think we've really done our job. One of my colleagues said yesterday, he was speaking at a retirement function, and he said, you know, it's a privilege to do this because we have the opportunity to change lives.
Mm-hmm.
And I was thinking about that, and you're right. If we teach students nothing more than the ability to look at a problem and find the opportunities, then I think in a very real sense, we've done something tangible for the economic well-being of this country.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we want to grow students who go out and see that there are lots and lots of ways to reach out to consumers and to reach out to businesses and to provide value. I don't want them to leave and be frustrated by lack of opportunity. I want them to leave and be overwhelmed by the amount of opportunity.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead. If you got a case study that you'd like to give us an example about?
Oh, in terms of, I mean, there's so many. Well, I have a lot of fun. I use Harley-Davidson cases quite a bit.
Yeah,
I have a lot of fun with that.
It's a classic.
Well, Harley, you know, Harley has, first of all, a 100-year history. So it's interesting to be able to look at an American company that, you know, is half as old as this country.
Mm-hmm.
But we start talking about Harley at the very beginning and, you know, the proud roots of an American manufacturing organization. And, you know, it literally is a story of a company that grew out of someone's garage. And Harley fell on bad times in the 50s and 60s and was really being hammered by the Japanese competitors. And the students love that. Most of them are not of the generation where Harley still has the kind of cachet that it has for people of my generation.
Right.
But they go home and they talk to their parents about it, and it's so interesting.
Oh, yeah.
Because a lot of them come in and they say, I didn't even know this, but my dad's motorcycle is a Harley. And so it really makes them,
that's what that tattoo on his arm means.
Right. And so they have a different appreciation for it. And so now they look at, you know, they're much more interested in the Japanese bikes now. And so now they look at the Japanese bikes and they look at Harley, and it really gives them an understanding of differences in market segments and differences in culture among different age cohorts and how companies have succeeded with that.
Well, and you know, and I know this is, you probably heard this story before, folks, because I've mentioned it on the show before. And talking about the ability to drive a brand to penetrate the market with a brand and to get a brand etched in people's minds. I mean, nobody out there, folks, not one person, I'm going to propose, not one American is walking around out there with Honda tattooed on the side of the on the shoulder.
Well, and that's
or Kawasaki on the side of the on the shoulder.
That's,
you know,
the
but there are a lot of people out there who have Harley tattooed or some Harley event or something on their tattooed. Now, I don't recommend it. I don't think it's a good idea, but it's a fact.
Well, it's the ultimate form of brand loyalty, and we're now starting to see young people with the Nike swoosh tattooed on them.
Yeah.
So, you know, you look at the icons of a generation, and
that's... Yeah, I think that's taking it a little too far. I wish we wouldn't do that, but...
I'm not advocating for it either. I'm saying to all the moms out there, I'm not advocating
for
that. But to give you, you know, just to see how far brand loyalty can be driven. And, you know, I think that companies do well to look at companies like... other companies like Harley as a benchmark for ways to drive consumer loyalty.
When you talk about these things, though, do you focus on the David and Goliath aspect at all? The fact that you can be a small business and still dominate?
Well, we talk about it in terms of, I mean, that's just a really classic segmentation and targeting issue. I mean, we talk about it in terms of a business does not have to hold the number one market share to be profitable. But there are many, many ways you can be profitable being the number 10 player or the number 100 player.
Right.
It depends on the total size of the market. It depends on your own corporate structure. It depends on what your core competencies are and how you're able to extract value from the segments that you target. And so I don't necessarily couch it in terms of David and Goliath, but I always say when you find a segment who truly appreciates what you do, then your job is to defend that, because that's a clear indicator to you that you're providing value to that particular segment.
Well, and also, see, I like to talk about dominating too, and but the thing is you don't have to dominate the world. You can just dominate your niche.
Correct. And that's, for some companies, that's the only appropriate strategy to follow. But it's hard to get students to recognize that at first, because so much of their textbooks are filled with examples of the number one. Now, that's getting better. They're starting to change.
Mm-hmm.
They're starting to look at regional players and niche players. But, you know, that's a tradition that's rather slow to work its way into our common theory.
Right. Okay, we're going to take a break, folks. When we come back, we're going to move over and talk about another area that Leslie's works with and is very excited about, and that's the executive MBA. For us old heads who want to go back and get another degree, add to our education, and she's an academic coordinator for the one there at Fisher College of Business. We're going to talk about what those look like, what an executive MBA program looks like, and how you can participate yourself. Tin Till, stay with us. We'll be right back. We're back at 7 till. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. Leslie Fine is our guest. Leslie, give us the Fisher School of Business website, please.
I think it's www.osu.fisher. You know, I'm embarrassed to say. I'm not sure
I think it's osu.edu/Fisher.
Yes.
F-I-S-H-E-R.
Yes. But if you go to the osu.edu webpage, we're very easy to find if you go to academic departments and go to College of Business.
Check it out. You can find out more about them, folks. And if you've listened to the other interviews, and none of them were as equally interesting as this one has been with Leslie. And if you've been following that, then you know what good folks they have there. Not these are not your father's professors, by the way, folks. These folks get it. They're in the 21st century. They realize that we're not in Kansas anymore, right, Leslie?
That's right. We are not in Kansas.
Leslie, let's talk about the executive MBA program. First, for those of us who might not know what this animal is, tell us what an executive MBA program is.
The program is packaged differently than a traditionally packaged MBA, but it's the same degree. In other words, this is a fully accredited academic degree, but we understand that working professionals cannot interrupt their career 2 years for a daytime MBA, and often don't have the freedom to take classes two nights a week, to be in a designated location two nights a week. So we reformatted the traditional MBA to offer some of the course content via the web and some of the course content into 3-day-a-week, once-a-month modules. So executives come to campus once a month for Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. And while they're not on campus, they do a lot of their commodity learning or core kinds of activities through the classroom that we have created on our website.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's just a very, very user-friendly format. A lot of our folks travel as part of their jobs. We have one student who commutes to our program from Santiago, Chile. We have a student who commutes from mainland China.
Every month he comes from mainland China?
Right. Well, he travels in his job anyway, so adding a leg to Columbus is really not that big of a deal.
Now, in order to be fair, though, folks, the Executive MBA is not a franchise of Fisher School of College of Business. This is, you can get an Executive MBA, maybe not exactly the way that Leslie's defining it in terms of the time spent on campus, but an Executive MBA is available all over the country.
Oh, yes, this is it's just like a regular MBA. Lots and lots of schools offer the formats. The formats are different, you know, depending on the school.
Some of them have like two weekends a month or something like that, and it's different. But the point is I just want to let people know, if you live in San Bernardino, California, and you can't get to Columbus, Ohio, you can find an Executive MBA somewhere near you there.
Oh, sure. The thing that makes our program attractive, I think, first of all, is, you know, the reputation of our college has been steadily climbing for the past 10 years. And so it's possible to get that top 20 MBA program and not be on campus more than once a month. And for executives, that's really, I think, very attractive. The other thing is, because of the way we select our class, the minimum requirement to be in the Fisher College Executive MBA program is 7 years of managerial experience. And so,
what about a degree?
We are really fairly indifferent as to what the person's undergraduate degree is.
But they do have to have one.
Yes.
Okay. You have to have an undergraduate degree. That's one of the thresholds.
But we have people who have everything from psychology and philosophy to chemistry and engineering. You know. The point is, we want people who bring to the classroom a diversity of experience and a richness of experience that they share with the members of the class. And so there's great cross-pollination of ideas across industries among executives about best practice.
How old is the oldest person you've had in your program?
Well, now, I'm not going to call anybody out, but we do have people in our program who have silver hair.
Well, what are you talking about, 50, 60, 70-year-old people?
We not 70s, but, and, you know, again, I'm not calling anybody out, but we have people in our program who are part of the silver hair crew. We also have young, fast-track professionals, and they interact together, and they have a wonderful experience.
Leslie, I'm going to have to stop you because we've come up to the end of the hour. Thank you for giving us some outstanding information today. We really appreciate your time.
Well, and I appreciate the opportunity, Jim.
Thanks for the good job you're doing for the students up there, too.
Thank you. Keep
up the good work.
Take care.
Leslie Fine, ladies and gentlemen, with the Fisher College of Business at Ohio State University. We'll have to have these guys back again another day. Got to go for this hour. Before I do, I want to thank my heroes, the small business owners. This is Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. This program is for you. I'll be right back.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.